The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you're listening to the Sunday afternoon show with Maud. It is 3 p.m. on Sunday, the 15th of May. And you can join me online using the chat function. Today we're going to discuss a new topic, which is Afro hair. Welcome.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, fellow educators and dear listeners. This is my seventh radio show as a hostess, and I'm delighted to share this experience in your company. But first, I have to introduce myself for new listeners. I am a French citizen of French and West African ancestry. I have lived in the UK since 2008, and I'm a professional educator. I work in a secondary state school in North London, where I teach languages as well as humanities. I do teach Spanish and French, as well as history and geography. I have also experience as a teacher in the charity sector. You can follow me on Twitter at ProfProfMFL, and all views are my own. Today, I want to focus on one topic that is relevant to me as an educator and also personally in my daily working life. The podcast and discussion will both be on the topic of Afro hair. This is mostly relevant to all school staff who work in the UK and abroad, and all people generally interested in fighting against racism, as well as people who are curious and want to learn more about Afro hair in general. Let's start with a definition. Afro hair, what does that mean? So Afro is a prefix that is derived from the term African. But it also means an Afro, it's a type of hairstyle with very tight curls in an evenly rounded shape. So this is the dictionary definition. Now let's dive into the subject to see really what we are talking about. Afro textured hair, it can also be called kinky, is the hair texture of most populations in sub-Saharan Africa and also in some areas of South Africa. It means that each strand of this type of hair grows in a very tiny angle-like helix shape. And the overall effect of that hairstyle, of that hair type, I should say, is pretty much contrasting with straight, wavy, or curly hair that we associated with European or Asian hair. Afro-textured hair looks more dense and more thick in appearance. So there's a lot of terminology to describe Afro hair. You may be familiar with terms such as kinky, spiraled, frizzy, curly, nappy in American English, and woolly as well. They all tend to be used to describe natural Afro-textured hair. There is a very formal term that you might not be familiar with. I wasn't before I did research on this show. And it's the term oulotricus, which means curly-haired in Greek. This refers to Afro-textured hair. And its antonym, which would describe someone's hair who is from, let's say, India, for instance, with very smooth, straight hair, it would be leiotricus, as opposed to oulotricus. So that's it for etymology. Now, why am I interested in this subject? Why am I bringing it to you today? Well, it's quite straightforward. I do have Afro hair because my mother is of Caucasian descent and she had very straight hair, straight and thick hair. And my father, who was West African, had Afro hair. Now, I have a different texture from my father because I'm mixed race, but I can still sport an Afro. So it has been an issue in my earlier life. And I did once or twice when I was a child try to change the quality of my hair. Very early on, though, I thought it was not being truthful to myself. And since then, I've been letting my hair natural and loose. But I realized that I was among a small minority of women with Afro hair who embraced the natural aspect of their hair. And I wanted to know more about it. So I've been looking online to see what other women who have Afro hair feel about their hair. And I stumbled upon a very interesting podcast. Sadly, it's only in French, so this is for our French-speaking listeners. So this is a podcast on Les Pieds sur Terre, which is a documentary podcast from France Culture, a very famous French radio. And it's the episode of Tuesday, the 6th of February, 2018, with an interview. So the woman who's interviewed is a French woman of Caribbean, West Indies, French West Indies ancestry. And she explains how she trained as a hairdresser in France. And she was really shocked to see that in the manual she used at hairstyling school, it said, it listed types of hair. And this manual was in use in 2010, so it's only 12 years ago. It said, and I quote, "Les cheveux crépus sur l'ensemble de la tête sont une affection congénitale ou héréditaire," which translates that as "frizzy hair on most of the hair are a hereditary and congenital affection." So it means that they saw frizzy Afro hair as something negative. And the woman who was talking about it was really shocked because let's have this into focus. In France, 25% of women have curly to frizzy, kinky, coily hair. So that's a big chunk of the French female population. And yet, it was just an aside if you wanted to train as a hairdresser, and it was almost seen as an anomaly, a hereditary anomaly. So since then, since 2010, when she realized this, Aline has opened up her hair salon where she tries to promote natural Afro hair. And she thought it was a political decision because she felt like having Afro hair was almost negated and put to the side and seen as an anomaly. So this is what I'm trying to do today in this podcast. I want to make Afro hair natural, normal, and respected as such. Now, we've had people with Afro hair for millennia, and yet we had to wait till 1997 for a scientific and professional classification of Afro hairstyles. I'm referring to the American hairstylist's work. He's called Andre Walker, and he's from Detroit. And Andre sports very curly hair. He's African-American. And he devised the Andre Walker hair typing system, which offers a classification of Afro-textured hair. So there's four types, from straight, number one, to wavy, number two, curly, number three, and then Afro number four. So these are four natural hair types. And then there's a letter system with A, B, and C to indicate the degree of coil. So the coil is the way the hair, if you pull at it, it will just bounce back like an elastic. So he had to use these variations and this coding system to show how varied, how diverse, and how different Afro hair is. Some people have tight coils, others wider ones. Some have a different density, sparse to dense. The strand of the hair, the diameter of the hair can be fine, medium, or coarse. And the feel, even the texture, can be described as cottony, woolly, or spongy. So this was a much needed classification for professional hairstylists and hairdressers all over the world. And I'm quite shocked that it had to be invented in 1997 and not earlier. But we have to thank Andrew Walker for this. So why did it take so long for African-American hairstylists to come up with that definition and that classification? Well, it's because most of the time, it, as in the French manual for hairstyling, Afro hair was presented as being an anomaly, almost like a chromosomal variation, something to hide or to change. And the way it was done was by chemically relaxing Afro hair. Now, Andrew Walker was one of the first who wanted to promote Afro hair, and by doing so, he had to provide a classification to allow hairstylists to use the proper products for each type of hair. So Andrew Walker, as I said, he was born in Chicago, Illinois, in 1956, so he's an American hairstylist. As I explained, there's many, many different types of Afro hair. If you want to have a look, type the Andrew Walker hair description or categorization. It goes from straight to kinky coily. It might be useful to show this to your students if you're a teacher so that they can define their hair types for their next trip to the hairdresser. As I said earlier, it became a political endeavor for Alina, the French hairstylist, to be able to promote Afro hair, and I assume for Andrew Walker as well. Now, I think it's really important that we talk about Afro hair. So, why am I talking about Afro hair? African hair is different from Asian and European hair. It is unique. But with the issue of Afro hair lies the issue of racial discrimination. The fact is that because Afro hair is not particularly common in Europe and Asia, it is seen and considered as inferior, lacking, or messy. Often in America, when people have to have a dress code at work, they are asked to straighten their Afro hair, as if having very kinky, coily hair was a sign of being unprofessional, whereas it's a natural type of hair. So when I mentioned that I have Afro hair, the way I style my hair has an impact on my daily life and on the way people treat me. I have to say, I very rarely sport an Afro in the sense of that big round Afro that is famous from the 60s and the 70s. Why don't I do that often? Well, because it gathers too much attention. And I'm not always keen on having people commenting on my hair. And also, in some occasions, I had people coming and touching my hair without asking, people in the pub or in the restaurant or in the shops. So this is why I usually try to control my hair so that it's less prominent or less big. And I just wonder why I feel like I have that urge. And I think it stems from social media, and films. Because since I was a little girl, the ideal type of hair that was promoted in Disney movies, for instance, was this beautiful, wavy, I call it the Disney princess hair. I'm sure you can picture what it looks like. So it's a little bit like the Little Mermaid, very long and smooth and wavy. And this is a definite Caucasian beauty standard that's been imposed because it's been the only one promoted. Now it's changing, and I have to be thankful for that because I'm in my 40s now and we can see curly hair on advertisements. Appearances and hairstyles are a way of expressing oneself, but it can also be a way of controlling people. And to me, the fact that so many black women with afro hair have to chemically relax their hair shows that they do not embrace their natural beauty. Now we have to celebrate some famous actresses or singers who are trying to promote traditional African or African-American hairstyles. We all know that Rihanna made the cover of Vogue wearing a durag. You might be surprised, but this was actually a political move because the durag was banned in the 1990s in many, many American states because it was seen as being deviant. The hairstyle of rappers, black men, and by association, criminals, which it isn't. The durag was a cheap and practical way of dealing with hair when slaves didn't have the time and the resources to deal with their hair. So, as I say, your hairstyle can be a political choice. Now, if you look at traditional Egyptian, ancient Egypt illustrations, the ones on the pyramids, you're all familiar on this type of hairstyle with the beautiful tight curls. Well, actually, you can see how it's done because there are still some people in Ethiopia who use something that looks like drumsticks and then they coil their hair around it. They use butter to keep it moist and smooth. So dealing with Afro hair is a very, very, very ancient art form and tradition. And we are familiar with old Egyptian hairstyles, but not so much with contemporary ones. So if you want to have a look at this, just use an internet search and type Afar men, A-F-A-R, and you're going to see what men do in rural Ethiopia to deal with their Afro hair, and it's beautiful. There are many hairstyles in Africa that are still traditional, promoting the magnificent texture of Afro hair. There is a Namibia tribe called the Himba who use clay, butter, ochre, and goat hair to create these sorts of magnificent sculpture out of their hair. Also, you're familiar with plaiting, braiding, and different hairstyles. In Nigeria, some women use acrylic yarn and Chinese thread to make sculptures out of their hair. The story of Afro hair is an unpleasant story because you have to mention slavery and the kidnapping of African people to be transported and to be sold to the Americas and to be enslaved and uprooted. I think we're all familiar with these pictures of the slave ships with the victims of slavery all lined up and locked up down at the bottom of the ship. The problem with this transfer by ship is that people got matted hair and got lice. So when they arrived in America, the first thing that happened to them before they got sold on the slave market was that people shaved their heads. And how dehumanizing is that action? But not only that, because they were all sold and sent to different areas of America, a lot of African slaves lost the traditions from their local village. They lost the art and techniques. They lost the ability by not having the resources or the time to take care of their own hair once they grew back. So they didn't have people from their local area with them. They might be with people from very different tribes. So the knowledge got lost. And then it's a whole part of their culture that got lost. The results of years of slavery and colonialism is the loss of traditional cultures and languages, but also the loss of hairstyles. And then in the 18th and 19th century in America happened the imposition of Caucasian beauty standards. The women who were mixed race and had less afro or kinky hair would suffer less. Not maybe very objective, but they might have to work less in the field, or they might end up having domestic duties. So they were seen as more valued. And this created a hierarchy in the African American society. So women who had hair that were more like Caucasian hair, the smoother, the straighter the hair, they got privileges. So it encouraged all African American women to try and change their hair texture, to try and fit in with a European Caucasian beauty standard. So at the time, 18th and 19th century, Afro-textured hair was perceived as unprofessional, unkept, political, activist, messy, primitive, and attention-seeking. And we might argue that it can still be the case in some areas of our societies. But there are some strong ladies who are trying to change this. If you are a French speaker, there's an amazing essay, philosophical essay, written by Juliette Smeralda called Peau Noire, Cheveux Crépus, L'Histoire d'une Aliénation. She entitled her essay Black Skin, Frizzy Hair, The History of an Alienation. And there is also the wonderful book called Afro, with a question, exclamation mark, by Rokhaya Diallo. And she gives 100 portraits of women with different Afro hair that are not chemically relaxed to promote the beauty of natural hair. There's a lot of literature on promoting natural hair. And if you want to have a look, they're great gift ideas for your school library as well as for friends. So now I'm going to let you have a think about the implication of that history, the slavery, imposition of beauty standards, the loss of traditional techniques to use and plait or braid or deal with very, very tight curls and coily hair. The historical and political impact of slavery and colonialism is huge on African-Americans, but also on people from the West Indies, Jamaica, and for a lot of people who are born in Africa and brought up in African societies, but who feel the impact of Hollywood movies or European culture. So the issue of Afro hair is political, it is historical, but it is also economical. And I'm going to let you have a think about this, and I'm going to play the news, and I'll see you after the news.
This episode of Teachers Talk Radio has been made possible with support from Witherslack Group, the UK's leading provider of SEN education and care. They're here to support you too through an ever-growing offer of free resources, including webinars, podcasts, articles, and events aimed at supporting teaching professionals like you. Visit their website at www.witherslackgroup.co.uk to find out more.
Imagine a world where you were free to focus on sparking curiosity in your students and giving them access to the awe and wonder of learning. A world where you were supported to deliver a truly personalized education to help all your learners achieve their potential. No need to imagine it, because that's exactly what the Oxford Smart Curriculum Service delivers. Seamlessly integrating curriculum, resources, assessment, next steps, and professional development, every component of Oxford Smart is connected and working to provide you with a uniquely coherent and responsive service that empowers you and your students with transformational effect. The Oxford Smart Curriculum Service. When everything connects, anything is possible.
Introducing Bulb. With evidence-based learning at the forefront of education, let Bulb digital portfolios help reshape your educational practice. Bulb helps teachers teach and learners learn. Bulb is an easy-to-use, fully accessible digital platform that captures students' digital learning assets in one place, allowing them to evidence their learning and reflect on their growth. our dedicated team of education specialists are on hand to ensure the Bulb fits seamlessly into all of your teaching practices. Come take a look and get a free account at bulbapp.com.
If you're listening to this, then we know we share one thing in common, a passion for the type of outstanding education that every child deserves. That's what makes us the leading provider of specialist education and care. We need people like you to help us achieve even more. With us, you'll be given all the resources and support you need, offered a clear path to career progression, and be rewarded with some of the best salaries and benefits the industry has to offer. We are Witherslack Group. If you'd like to find out more, we'd love to hear from you. Visit www.witherslackgroup.co.uk/careers and be part of our future.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Joe Fox.
FE Week reports on Ofsted findings following new inspections within the sector. Recent inspections at three colleges found that standards had not slipped in the decade since their last inspection. All three colleges retained their outstanding grades. The three colleges in Yorkshire were last inspected 10 years ago, but the latest reports highlight the high standards that have been maintained over time. The inspections took place at Notre Dame Catholic Sixth Form College in Leeds, Barnsley College and Greenhead College, both in West Yorkshire. Outstanding colleges are subject to full inspections for the first time this year since 2010, after an exemption was lifted. In Kent, the Isle of Thanet News website reports on the opening of Phys Lab at St Peter's Junior School. The purpose-designed hub within the school grounds enables children to enjoy hands-on experience in exploring the world of physics and general science. The hub was opened in partnership with Ogden Trust. Nathan Williams, the school's award-winning science lead, says the opening of the hub had been fantastic and that children and staff from the school and those from partnership schools were looking forward to exploring a range of scientific learning opportunities. The hub will also be accessible to local schools not in the partnerships. Cameron Ogden, chair of Ogden Trust, stated, "Physics as a subject has huge importance. We are determined that everyone have access to inspiring physics education." Many media outlets report on the arrest of three people on suspicion of involvement in female genital mutilation at an unregistered school in Birmingham. Police, prompted by Ofsted inspectors who had reportedly found a locked room containing medical equipment and a bed, searched the school. Ofsted inspectors were originally following up reports of an unregistered school, but concerns were raised about possible illegal practices, so police were called in. In recent weeks, the Department for Education has announced an increase in powers for Ofsted inspectors so that unsafe, unregistered schools could be shut down. Good Housekeeping has published advice for students in managing their finances. The information on their website includes advice on how to access additional support, eligibility for tuition fee loans and maintenance loans, as well as the implications for repayment. It also outlines other funding pots some students may be able to access. As the cost of living continues to rise, the website reminds students and parents that the deadline for student finance for new students is the 20th of May. In South Africa, the Minister of Higher Education will table a budget for the department's strategic vision for the coming year. The budget will focus on COVID recovery and provide fully subsidised financial support to students. It will also help to increase participation rates amongst people with disabilities and women. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio Weekend News with Joe Fox.
Back to the topic of Afro hair. So I left you before the news with that question. How is that relevant to know about Afro hair as an educator in the UK? Well, it is a very important thing to know about the history of Afro hair because we need to teach our students the history of Afro hair. We need to inform them of the effect of colonization and slavery on the imposition of beauty standards on women. And we need to also show them the economic issues that it creates in our contemporary world. We also need to have a knowledge of these issues surrounding Afro hair in order to protect our students from physical harm. This is our duty in regard to PSHE education. And also, it is our duty to fight against racism and promote British values of non-discrimination. So this is why I'm encouraging any teachers working in the UK and as well as Europe to show to our students what type of hair we have. Different types of hair. We have straight, we have wavy, and we have curly. And this is because we have different types of follicles. So people with very curly hair have follicles that are oval-shaped, whereas people with straight hair have follicles that are round. There is that classification I mentioned about Andrew Walker. This is something that you might want to put and display in the toilets in your schools, or in PSHE, you might want to show it in a slide. Now, what are the health risks regarding afro hair? So there isn't any health risks by having afro hair when you leave it in its natural way. But there's a lot of health risks when people are trying to change the quality of their hair. The three main risks to the student's health if they choose to change their hair quality are, first, traction alopecia. This is what happens when girls, and it's usually girls, but it might be some boys, but mostly girls, pull their hair too tight and do that repetitively every day. It creates tension on the root of the hair, which often leads to hair loss. Now, the second very important risk is chemical burns on the scalp. The only way to relax afro hair is by using a type of caustic soda, which is the same product that is contained in cleaning products for the toilet. It is extremely potent and harmful. It can create severe burns. Now, another risk caused by these chemical relaxants that contain lye as well is endocrinological disorders. Many studies in America have shown that relaxers can cause reproductive problems, heart diseases, and higher levels of cancer as well as fibroids in the female community. Chemical relaxers were invented by Garrett Morgan. He was the son of a former slave in America, and in 1910, he was trying to create a new lubrication for the sewing machine needle. The product he was working on accidentally touched the hair on his arm, and he noticed that the hair began to lay straighter. So this is how, by accident, he developed a hair topical for Black people or African Americans to chemically force their natural curly hair straight. He called this invention the relaxer. So you might ask why, particularly if you don't have afro hair, if you have Caucasian looking hair, so very straight with a round follicle. You might ask, why are women, particularly women, but there's a lot of men who also relax their hair, but why are some people who have afro hair trying to change and straighten their hair? It might be a good question to ask your students as well. Well, the reason why a lot of women and men relax their hair is the same reason as why they also might use bleaching cream to change the color of their skin. It's because of social pressure. And it's because of the fact that they have suffered from racism and they have started to see their skin color or their hair type as wrong or negatively. So I'm going to quote Alim Ahmed, who in 2014 explained, "I am a 38-year-old female who has tried almost every lightening cream and whitening product out there. I have been dealing with low self-esteem due to the darkness of my skin, and I really wanted it to be lighter." So this shows something. People who suffer from racism or discrimination internally keep that racism and start having some self-esteem issues. So a lot of people who try to look like their most famous actresses or most famous singers are going to try to have a different type of hair to fit in. So PSHE and safeguarding is a duties that UK teachers have to follow. So my advice is look for your students. You might have students with afro hair. Look at the children who scratch their scalp a lot in lessons because they might have a constant rash or itch due to traction, extreme traction with two plaits that are too tight. Look out for students who complain about their hairstyle being too tight. Also, look out for children whose afro hair seems unkept and tangled, because that could be a sign of neglect, that their parents are struggling and need help. You might want to look out for the students who have their hair always too tight. You might want to look out for students who express feelings of self-loathing and make constant negative comments about their skin color and their hair type. If you want to promote healthy self-esteem and healthy natural beauty, you might want to praise your students when they have let their hair in a natural way. Hair politics at school is a thing. You need to check your school uniform policy, because in some schools in the UK, there is a mention about hairstyles. I understand that some schools do not want their students to dye their hair with very extreme colors such as purple and blue. Now, it becomes a political issue if some hairstyles are banned, such as cornrows. Cornrow is an Afro-Caribbean tradition and also an African tradition. It's a way to keep hair tight and protected. Some schools have banned cornrows, particularly for boys. This has discriminatory connotations. I want to talk about the case of a lovely girl that I've met on Zoom during the lockdown, the first lockdown, when I started to work on the issue of fighting against racism. So her name is Ruby Williams, and I'm saying her name because she has an online presence, because her plight was described in the media. So Ruby Williams was a secondary school student in 2016, and she was persecuted, and I use the word, and I know how deep the meaning is. So she was persecuted by her senior leadership management at her school because they said her afro was too big. So Ruby had a big afro, which is quite rare. Teenagers usually don't often sport a big afro, but Ruby was proud of her afro hair. Ruby is mixed race. Her mother is white, Caucasian, and her father is black, and he has an afro as well. So Ruby was really happy to have her hair au naturel. Now, her school was pestering her to stop and to plait her hair or to use chemical relaxer or to change her hair. And Ruby didn't want to. And Ruby was really lucky because she has a mother who is a teacher. So it's a woman who has the resources, the time, and also the knowledge about discrimination and how to fight against it. So Ruby's mother had to go as far as prosecute the school because at the end, they didn't want Ruby to come and attend her lessons if she had her afro. In the end, Ruby received £8,500 in an out-of-court settlement after she took legal action against the Urswick School in East London. She had been told her hair breached policy, and I quote the policy in the school. The school policy said, "Afro style hair must be of reasonable size and length." Now, the term reasonable is a very subjective term, and here it definitely had some racist connotations. So, I want to mention a few resources that you might want to use as a teacher, as an educator, but also as a fellow listener who wants to broaden their minds and gather some useful information. So there's three films I'm going to advise you to watch if you have access to it online, if you can stream them. There's a great documentary by Chris Rock called Good Hair. It's from 2009, so it's not recent, but it shows how there's a whole economic system, a business that is thriving because of African-American women feeling too insecure to actually sport their natural hair. So Good Hair by Chris Rock. Now there's another movie that I recommend watching, and it's called Self-Made, and it's inspired by the life of Madame C.J. Walker, who was a woman who became the first black millionaire businesswoman in America selling hair products. Now, it's a bit controversial because she was selling relaxers as well, but I really want to recommend that movie because it does show the impact of beauty standards, Caucasian beauty standards, on the African-American population. And a third movie I would recommend that got the Concha d'Or, which is a prize, it's Pelo Malo. So it's a Spanish-speaking movie, and it's about a little boy who is struggling with his very curly hair. I think it's set in South America. And he's a little boy who, and there's also an LGBTQ aspect to the film. So I would definitely recommend these three movies: the documentary Good Hair, the biopic Self-Made, and the feature film Pelo Malo. Now, there are lots of teaching resources you might want to use as a teacher if you want to show your students the history of Afro hair and also to promote the beauty of natural hair. So I'm going to recommend you to check a website, www.worldafroday.com. If you're a teacher, you might want to add /education, and then you'll just happen to click and find some resources about World Afro Day. World Afro Day is a brilliant invention, and it's a woman who invented it, Michelle De Leon. She's the founder of World Afro Day. World Afro Day happens on the 15th of September, so the next one is on the 15th of September 2022. And Michelle De Leon's vision is that we need to show little girls who have or who have not Afro hair, that Afro hair is beautiful. So she has created a world assembly that teachers can log on to on the 15th of September. And don't worry, if your timetable doesn't allow it, you can always play it later on because the link is available on the website. So World Afro Day is a global day, and Michelle De Leon wanted it to be a tool of change, education and celebration of Afro hair. It is endorsed by the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. Michelle De Leon works with families, schools and authorities because she wants to tackle discrimination against people who have Afro hair. And she offers on her website research, she creates events and produces educational resources to empower people with Afro hair and to raise awareness. And today I'm trying to raise awareness with this podcast, but I'm just one of a lot of women who are trying to promote the beauty of natural hair for social reason, economical reason, health reasons. I just want to anyone who has very kinky, coily hair to feel like their hair is beautiful and it is professional and positive to have an afro. So, Michelle De Leon said that the idea was to promote every little child of African descent to feel good about their hair. I might add as well that it's not just African descendants who have Afro hair. There might be communities or children who have very, very curly, coily hair who don't happen to have African descent. I'm thinking of some Scottish children who have very, very curly hair or coily hair. Some people who are Jewish who have very, very kinky hair. So all these people need to feel that they are represented and that their hair is beautiful in its natural way. So as a teacher, you might want to add this day, World Afro Day, in your timetable of events at school, you might want to prepare an assembly for it. And I'm happy to provide you help with if you connect with me on Twitter at Prof MFL, or you might want to just use the website I recommended. It is at a click away. Whether you know a lot about Afro hair or not, we can all make a difference. So I'm going back to the issue of PSHE, because I think I might have gone too fast on it. I really want to insist on the fact that it is a health hazard to promote relaxing products. I'm going to quote research by the Black Women's Health Study. It's a study group. It was a survey that collected 59,000 sets of information from premenopausal African-American participants. And they realized in that study that in America, the incidence of fibroids is 2 to 3 times higher in Black women than in white women. So they tried to find out why there was such a racial bias, because uterine fibroids derives from an endocrine disrupting chemicals. And they found out that it's due to the use of hair relaxers. A lot of Black African-American women straighten their hair, and a lot of them use these endocrine disrupting chemical. So that chemical in particular is called lye, L-Y-E, or sodium hydroxide, or even phthalates. And these are the ones that are used to straighten hair, change the hair quality of Afro hair. And this has a direct impact on women's health. It's worse than traction alopecia, because traction alopecia is just an issue about appearance. If you lose your hair on the side, on above your temples, it's going to be difficult for your self-esteem and your social, on a social aspect, but it's not going to put your general health in question. But the use of chemical relaxers does, by disrupting your hormonal balance. So I think it's really important that we tell our students here in the UK, and also if we happen to be teaching in Africa, promote natural beauty, encourage students not to use chemical relaxers, encourage girls never to use skin products that bleach their skin, because we don't want the next generation to suffer from hormonal disruption. And also, it's a big business, so there's lots of advertisement. So it's our duty as teachers to reduce the impact of this negative cycle of low self-esteem, because some people are thriving financially. The skin lightening industry worldwide is estimated at £3.9 billion. That's a lot of money. By 2027, it is predicted to grow even more, up to $7.3 billion. So we see how important this issue of promoting African beauty, dark skin, Afro hair. It's about the future of our generation, and also the future of the health of us, of our children. It has a massive impact on countries' budgets and on our children's self-esteem. So, as a teacher or as an educator, your first step after this podcast, I hope, is going to be to check your school policy regarding hairstyles. Make sure you think about how you approach students who are from Afro-Caribbean traditions or African traditions. We all have students. I mean, I teach in London. It might not be the same if you're in the Hebrides or in Cornwall, but you might have students who always have a comb in their hair because they have an afro. We might want to give them the opportunity to use these combs outside the classroom, obviously not in lesson, but we might want to accept that these traditions are because an afro needs a lot of care. And I want to refer to my next topic. We're going to receive a guest. We're going to welcome a guest at 4 o'clock. And we're going to talk about the issue of keeping Afro hair, because there's a reason why so many students plait their hair too tight, choose to use chemical relaxers. And the reason mostly is time and also money. Keeping an afro is very time consuming. So there's a reason why some of our students from the West Indies, for instance, of Jamaica, always have a comb in their bags. It's because you need to keep your afro nice and round, and it's a lot of care. So I think we need to think about our school policies when we target the issue of how to promote Afro hair's beauty. I think it's about time to listen to our jingle, and then we will receive our guest.
This episode of Teachers Talk Radio has been made possible with support from Witherslack Group, the UK's leading provider of SEN education and care. They're here to support you too through an ever-growing offer of free resources, including webinars, podcasts, articles, and events aimed at supporting teaching professionals like you. Visit their website at www.witherslackgroup.co.uk to find out more.
Imagine a world where you were free to focus on sparking curiosity in your students and giving them access to the awe and wonder of learning. A world where you were supported to deliver a truly personalized education to help all your learners achieve their potential. No need to imagine it, because that's exactly what the Oxford Smart Curriculum Service delivers. Seamlessly integrating curriculum, resources, assessment, next steps, and professional development, every component of Oxford Smart is connected and working to provide you with a uniquely coherent and responsive service that empowers you and your students with transformational effect. The Oxford Smart Curriculum Service. When everything connects, anything is possible.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello?
Rochelle is an illustrator, and she's been working on books for children mostly. So, Rochelle, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you now. Welcome.
Great. Hi. Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you. So, Rochelle, I wanted to invite you today to share your experience with our listeners. So could you tell us, don't need to give us any confidential information, but tell us who you are, what you do, and then tell us what do you know about Afro Hair?
I'm an illustrator and I'm also mixed race, so I'm from the Caribbean. My experience with Afro Hair is my own. And it's just, I suppose it's the 40 odd years of having to take care of it, style it, live with it. I kind of feel like I've got quite a few stories and experiences to share.
I would even say you're an expert, aren't you?
I wouldn't go as far as that. I suppose if you've lived with something for that long, then maybe you are. But for my type of hair, then yeah, I do feel like I've just now starting to get the hang of how to take care of it, like, you know, properly.
Could you describe for us your type of hair?
So my hair is quite, I would say it can be quite frizzy, and it can be very poofy and, it can get quite big. I wouldn't say it's not like a solid afro. It has a good shoulder length to it. But my coils are very, different depending on which side of my, like at the front, it's a different kind of coil to the back. It has a bit of a mind of its own. I'm not going to lie. It can be quite a pain to maintain and look after. As my husband will tell you, he's had to put up with many days where it's just like, right, it's a hair day. It's a whole day.
Yes. So could you tell us how long you spend per week on dealing with your hair and maybe how much money you spend on it?
Oh, gosh. Money-wise, there is... I don't know. There's so many of us. We spend so much money trying to take care of these curls. So I couldn't give you a price, but I do have many products. And it's like you're just going through all of them trying to find the one that, you know, it's like a constant game of trying to get that perfect curl. It drives you mad after a while. And time-wise, I mean, I have to give it a good... I mean, every night before I go to bed, I kind of braid it in the kind of a safe braid that can stop it from getting too knotty throughout the night. And I do that every night. And then it has to have like so many deep conditions, a deep treatment as well, because Afro curls, they tend to dry out quite easily. And, you know, it's all because of the oils in the scalp trying to reach through that, go over that coil and try to get to the end. So the ends tend to get quite dry. So you do find yourself having to do a lot of leave-in conditioners and stuff like that. And because it gets knotty, you're always trying to detangle as well. And yeah, it's a lot of drama, I'm not going to lie.
I hear that you have to do that process every evening of plaiting your hair. Do you wear something on top of your hair when you go to bed?
Yeah. So I have like a silk scarf, and I also have a silk pillowcase as well. I never used it. It was something that I kind of had in the last, you know, few years. I think it started to become a thing where this was available, and it kind of helps to stop the hair from getting so knotty. And also it's great because it stops all the stuff that you've put in there to keep that moisture in from just being absorbed by your pillowcase. So it kind of stays on the hair rather than, you know, ending up in your pillowcase, which is it's a nice kind of a satin pillowcase or a silk scarf that I use to wrap it up in. Yeah.
Okay. So that's your evening routine. What do you do in the morning then?
In the morning, it's just a bit of a spruce up, really, because it depends on, you know, because Maud, I think you're quite comfortable with your safety hairstyles, but I like to have my hair out. I know you said you didn't, but I actually do. So I do wear my hair out a lot, which means I have got a big poofy hairstyle like all the time, because I find for me that it's less time consuming than me trying to style it every day. So I wear it out. It does mean though that I have a lot more knots to deal with, but it is. you know, that's the way I like it. I've always wanted to have my hair out. I mean, this was a little kid. It's like, growing up, my mom was always braiding my hair and putting into safety braids and stuff like that. And, you know, growing up in the UK, I always felt like everyone else had their hair out, had beautiful ponytails. And here I am with my braids. And so I was never happy with that. And so I've always wanted it out. I don't know. It's like you're constantly trying to get that beautiful, long, luscious locks look all the time.
The Disney princess hair, I call it.
Yeah. And I think it's because that's what we see on TV. And it's what, you know, we are surrounded by, and so that you want that too, especially because, you know, as children you do want to fit in, which is why I think this discussion is so important, actually, because I know it might feel quite niche, but in actual fact is, you know, we've all had experiences of people outside of our, you know, domain just coming in and just touching our hair and making comments. I mean, it happened when I was at school, and it happens even today. Like, you know, and it's always so awkward having to tell people, could you please not, you know, this is my space. Could you not touch my hair? And especially at school as well. Like, I was speaking to a friend not long ago, and she was saying that her child was in, I think, year two or year three at primary. Mm-hmm. And her daughter, she commented that her teacher in the playground had touched her hair and made a comment like, oh, isn't it soft, you know? And it's just, and the child, even the child made a note of that, you know? So she knew that she didn't like it. It felt uncomfortable. And then what does that comment mean? As if she was expecting it to not be soft. And then,
exactly.
You know, and it's just one of those things. It's just like, it's just learning that, like everyone else, we don't want to have that happen. You know, it's just like, this is my space. And so it is really important to discuss, you know, Afro hair and the fact that it's different and to be appreciated. And it cannot be just lumped in with everyone else's in the same breath, because it has a whole other routine that, you know, that needs to be understood and appreciated.
Yes, and I think a lot of people don't know because it's never shown in the media. We never see a singer or an actress who happens to be sporting an afro. All the care she has to do, like you say, putting products before bed, plaiting it, putting a special pillowcase so that you don't damage your bed linen, and then in the mornings, brushing up the curls so that they look... so that they look good. All this takes time. And I was saying as well that some of our students might not have the time and the resources to do it. And then they go for braiding or plaiting because it's practical. And then it might be too tight because, you know, we're supposed to keep them for only 4 weeks, the plaits. Because it's expensive, the parents might want to have it really tight so that it stays longer. And then we see a lot of students with almost no hair above their temples.
And that actually did happen to one of my friends, actually. Braids are one of those things that they have a place, you know. And I've braided my hair in the past. And as long as you're careful and you're really taking care of that hair, when you put it in there and when you take it out, then that's fine. But when you're a teenager, I just think, you know, I mean, I need a certain amount of time to get my hair prepped for braids. And I just don't know even at primary level, if that level of time is going to be put in when it comes to braids. And making sure that hair is protected. Because I do have a friend who had braids all the way through secondary, and now that she's, you know, obviously with the same age, now that she's grown up, the whole entire front of her hair is like, it's almost non-existent, and there's hardly much of it left now, because obviously putting a braid in, if it's adding a hair extension braid to it, then you're putting weight on each bit of hair, and that weight over time just weakens that hair follicle. So it is, you know, it's fine if you're going to do it properly, but I can imagine over a long period of time it's probably not the answer.
Because of traction alopecia, definitely.
Yeah. But there definitely needs to be an understanding. I mean, I see a lot of girls going to, especially if it's a uniform school now in secondary, you'll see them now opting to just wear the safety hair cap, you know, that you put on at nighttime. I'm seeing that more and more now at young girls from secondary, because there is so much work involved to keeping that afro hair. And we're so... we hear those comments all the time that our hair looks messy, and mm-hmm. you know, it's you know, we hear that it doesn't look tight, it's not neat enough, and that's because of the comparisons of our hair with Caucasian hair, for instance. And yeah. it seems really, it's so unfair, because that is the natural way of our hair, you know? And even from my point of view, like, even I'm trying to chase that perfect curl, and I'm like trying to break free of that myself, to go, do you know what? My hair isn't always moisturized. It isn't always, you know, like that. In fact, it just wants to naturally be frizzy, and that is classed as messy and unkept, for instance. But do you know what? We need to stop that as well, because we're just not embracing what our hair wants to do, and we need to make it more normalized. So it's just, you know, so we all look at that hair and not look at it and think, oh, isn't she unkept? Isn't she? She's not maintaining herself. It's the hair is the way the hair is. And it seems unfair that we have to go through that extra level all the time to keep up the standard that it's incredibly hard to achieve.
Yes, and this is an issue, because as someone with an afro type of hair, you need more time to take care of your hair. But it's never counted into the time it takes for your normal day routine.
Yes, of course.
I know traditionally in Africa, there was in the tribe, there was women who all gathered together, usually around the main tree, which is where the council used to happen. And they would all plait each other's hair, or they would all treat each other's hair using shea butter or even animal butter. And just they took the time to prepare each other's hair. We don't have that community in our modern individualistic society, so it's all on us. It's all on our shoulders.
It would be great if schools actually did take that on board as well. Just did a bit of appreciation of the time that's required for Afro hair, because you know it's important.
I wanted to go back to what you said. So you see girls in your area, so in London, who wear a type of cap. Do you think it's a bit similar to the durag in America?
Yeah. So it's very similar. And I mean, it's becoming more and more common now to do that, because, you know, I think it's the easiest option. If, you know, because when I was a kid, my mum used to braid my hair all the time. And then as my family grew, she was having to braid like all of us girls. And it was tiring for her. But also, as you become a teenager, you don't really want that look anymore. You want to have a more grown up hairstyle. Mm-hmm. And the maintenance required as well. And also, everyone's hair is different. So you're all going through a learning journey with your hair. Because every coil is different. Every product works differently. And so, yeah, I don't know if when you're that age, you've really got the time and the patience to put that time in. So they are wearing more, you know, the usual thing they would have worn to protect their hair in the house is now, you know, slowly making its way outside.
I wonder if it's allowed in the school policy, actually. And I think we need to check this out as educators.
And also... It kind of occurred to me as well. I'm surprised nobody's thought of perhaps creating a product for the same thing, but for outside, you know, so that it's still, you know, it feels like you've got a nice headscarf. And we've got so many beautiful African, you know, patterned headscarves. Could there not be an alternative, similar material, but for part of the school uniform? Because I feel like there is no option. It's like you've got to wear this, or what else is there? You know,
That's a great business idea, Rochelle.
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking it every time I see it. I'm like, why have I not started this yet?
So tell me what you were thinking of doing in your profession to promote the beauty of Afro hair or natural hair.
Well, because I'm an illustrator, and I'm currently working in picture books. I do want to eventually put together, I mean, I have started to put together a picture book about natural hair, and just the kind of, the stories that are from my own childhood to my friends, you know, kids, and what they've experienced day to day with their Afro hair, because there is a reality that a lot of girls, especially at primary level, start to rebel against their curls, and because of those comments and people touching and, you know, and seeing everyone else have an easy life with their curls. And I mean, growing up, my hair, you know, it was always sticking up. You know, our hair does not grow down, it grows out. Yeah. And so having hair that sticks up all the time, you know, you end up just having, especially kids, you know, will always comment and say stuff. So a lot of young girls, you know, start to rebel against their curls. And, you know, my youngest, she has curly hair, not afro hair, because, you know, her dad is Caucasian. So, but she did inherit the curls. And I've always it would have broken my heart for her to feel that about hair, especially because her sister actually has quite straight hair in comparison. And so it was like my mission to make sure that she really did appreciate the beauty that she had, these gorgeous ringlets. And she does, she's so proud of them now. And if anything, you know, she wants them out, and she gets lots of lovely comments about them and stuff, because who doesn't love lovely comments, you know? So yeah, I think it's really important that we are making sure that the next generation of young girls do realize how beautiful it is. Yes, it's hard work, but actually it's a part of your race. It's a part of, you know, it makes a part of your identity as well. It shouldn't be something that we find that is, we want to change it so drastically that it's not even, it doesn't resemble what it naturally is because of some other standard that we can never meet, you know? So yeah, I do want to do more picture books. And especially every time I do one of my characters and stuff, most of my characters are based around, you know, brown skin, and they have lots of different types of hair curls and stuff like that. I like to try and show that there is so much diversity in it. So yeah, that is my secret mission, is to create more picture books like that, really.
Well, it's a great mission. And I guess you have a lot of fun drawing the hair, because as you say, it has different textures. So how do you approach this as an illustrator?
Well, I do my research, and I have a look at all the different textures there are out there, and you know, just try and get it as close to a realistic hairstyle. I see a lot of illustrators just go for a particular way of drawing curly hair, and it's always one particular way, big curls or big sweeping curls, although it's a flat color with a hint of texture to it. And a lot of the time, sometimes it looks really messy, like it's just, you know, no child would be walking around like that, you know, and that kind of gets me a little bit, because it's like, actually, the way they've drawn it makes it look unkept. Like it's like you have drawn it badly, you know, and it's a lot of the time it's not showing the true nature of the texture and the true pattern of the hair. It's no appreciation for that. And so I always try and draw it in a way that actually it shows the coils of realistic curls, and, you know, and how it would look naturally. Because I just feel like, you know, I don't want it just to all of them just all to look the same, because my hair texture is completely different to yours, Maud, and so is my daughter's. And, you know, that even the child I was mentioning before, her hair texture is completely different as well. So why not have some true representation of all the different varieties? It's like we've got so many picture books in the world. I don't see why we can't.
And you said it yourself that even on one head of hair, you might have different quality of hair.
Yes,
for one person.
It's so true.
I had one more question. When you were a teenager, because we all know we've been through teenagehood, it's a difficult time, and you have to accept your body changing. You have to accept becoming a woman or a man. And how did you accept your curls? Did you ever consider relaxing your hair? How did you see your identity as a teenager with that perspective of the hair?
I don't think I truly accepted my hair till I was a lot older. I did relax my hair when I was younger. I got picked on a lot at secondary level because my hair was natural to start off with. And it was really like heartbreaking, because it wasn't because I was in love with my hair or anything. It was just at that age, I just didn't think about it. I was just, you know, my mum was braiding it for quite a long time because it was so much to deal with. And then after that, I just, you know, when I started to come into my own, I didn't quite like her hairstyles anymore, and I didn't know what to do with it myself. So I was a right mess with it at school. But I don't think, and also because I got picked on so much as well, it forced me to kind of feel unhappy with it, and just feeling like I had to force it into something else because mm-hmm. what it was now was getting all the wrong attention. And, I didn't want to, stand out in that way. And when you're in that age group, you know, all you want to do is to find your tribe and your people, and just, you don't want to be on the outside. And so I did end up after, first I started doing braids, and then after braids, I started to relax my hair. And it was terrible because, you know, when you relax a lot, you end up with very short hair by the end of it. So I started off with quite long hair, only to have very short amount, because it just causes so much damage to the hair that it literally
burns the hair.
Yeah. It weakens it so badly, and then it just breaks off eventually. So I think by the time I was in my, where was I? Was it? I was, yeah, I think I got to about my 30s, I think. I was almost at my 30s, and I think it was my first pregnancy, because obviously when you're pregnant, you don't want to be mixing with that kind of stuff anyway. You don't want any chemicals coming near you at that point. So I stopped all that stuff at that point. And then through my pregnancy and having a baby, I'm like, I didn't have any time for dealing with my Afro hair at that point. My hair just, I let it to grow out. It was just equally a sorry state going after that, because there's just no time for hair when you've got children. And so it went all the relaxer. Unfortunately, once it's relaxed, you can't go back. So whatever relaxer was in there would just stay until that bit of strand grew out and broke off. And so I think I must have came out of that after my second child, and I think that's when like the big push towards natural hair, that natural hair movement, was really starting to take off. And I think I'd moved to London at this point, and I think it was the first time as a grown-up I could start to see like all the relax had pretty much broken off, and I was starting to see my own natural curls. And it felt so weird because I hadn't seen those natural curls in such a long time. And I loved them. They were these beautiful little tiny ringlets, and I loved them so much. And now they're a pain, absolute pain. But at that point I was just like, oh my God, this is great. So it was
a discovery.
It was a real discovery, and it was kind of sad also because I lost so many years to this kind of, you know, this false narrative almost that I'm pushing for this look that was just never going to be, you know, having that lovely, relaxed, long hair. It was just never going to happen. And then I went natural. And to be fair, you know, occasionally I've braided it to do like a protective style, like when I go on holiday and stuff like that, because I just don't want to deal with my hair when I go on holiday in that heat. But generally, I'm always natural now, and I don't think I'll ever go back to chemicals, really. But it's just, once again, it's that whole push, you know, to conform, because you feel that, you know, your hair is not good enough, you know, and it's such a sad, sad state of affairs where we are. We've got something that's naturally part of us, and we just look at it in that way.
It feels like what we have is not fitting the society we live in, and that we have to change to be accepted. What I take from what you just said is that you went on a journey that took you from, I guess, your mum being from Jamaica, she had this tradition of plaiting hair because it's easier. It's still very aesthetic. Mm-hmm. It's also protective, but when it's repeated, it might lead to traction issues with the root of the hair, and also it might be seen as a bit childish because this is what little children wear. So you had this, then as a teenager you wanted to fit in, so you started relaxing, and then it took you, you had to rebuild your confidence as a woman, and motherhood helped somehow. And now you have accepted who you are, and you have promoted your natural hair beauty, although you do are very honest about the cost and the time that you need to devote to that hair.
You have to be realistic with it. It's not something that I can just say it's great, because it's a hard it's a hard slog. But then I think it's just fitting it into your life. And I think this is, you know, a lot of people probably wonder why black people go on so much about their hair. It's because of the time it takes. It's not, it's no joke. Okay. We are just like spending a lot of time, a lot of products, constantly trying to keep it hydrated, trying to, you know, stop it from getting too tangly, because the detangling can be such a pain. And it's the reality of having it natural. And I could see why a lot of people would lean towards, you know, an easy life by relaxing it or putting something in it, because you do feel like you're at the behest of this hair that's so, you know, got a mind of its own. But if we don't, you know, promote that natural hair, then I think we kind of will feel like we're going backwards again, back into the relaxing and all that kind of stuff. Just isn't, it's just like you said, none of it's good for you. And as someone actually who has had fibroids, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's all connected. And I just, you know, I would not want that for my own children. I would hate for them to even, I would never even let them consider it. I would be so concerned if they were. So it kind of goes to show how much, you know, I've gone full circle with it.
Yes.
Because it's just it's so harsh.
It was a journey. I want to ask you, what do you hope to achieve with your work as a writer and an illustrator in the next 5 to 10 years with that perspective of Afro hair?
I wouldn't mind it if, you know, a little gem of wisdom was shared amongst those that read those books and learn a little bit about the realities of behind a child of that age dealing with curls that perhaps don't fit in with everyone else, you know, and just for them to be sympathetic towards the fact that, you know, it's not an easy task, and they might be sensitive to comments being made, and they definitely don't want you touching their hair. And, you know, I think it's such a, you know, because when I write my books, it's not just about teaching the child to go on a journey. I also appreciate there is an adult reading this book as well. And why not? We never stop learning. Why can't an adult learn from a picture book as well? And then from a child's point of view, it's always going to be about representation, for them to feel that they exist in the world and the world has acknowledged them. And I think every child deserves to have true representation. I know it's something that growing up, I don't think I felt it. I feel we're at a time now where picture books are opening up more and are more diverse. But, you know, I still think we have some way to go. And I think, you know, we should be definitely, we're going in the right direction, which is great.
I think it's much better than in our childhood.
Definitely, yeah.
Where Black people were not on TV. I mean, the only Black people I knew on TV were Michael Jackson and Bill Cosby, and we know now what happened. It's definitely changing for the best. But I would say it won't be normalized until you can go to any hairdresser on the high street and say, "Oh, I want my hair plaited," or yes. I have kinky coily hair type 4. Mm-hmm. Can you treat my hair? Unless yes, yeah. every hairstylist knows how to treat African Afro hair in any hair salon in the world, I don't think we'll have reached equality of representation.
It's really true. It's such a good point. And, you know, I'm glad you touched up on that, because I remember when I was at uni and I'd never been to a hairdresser's at this point. I think I'd been to an Afro-Caribbean one, but I'd never been to just a general one. And I remember walking into them going, "Look, I need to get a haircut." And they just looked at me like, "We don't do your hair type." And that happened so often. Like, I did wonder if it was just them or if it was just like a general gossip. And at the time, it was all of them. Like, you know, you stuck to your hairdresser, which was the Afro-Caribbean one. And if you had Caucasian hair, you'd go to the other one. But it was just, I did find that quite surprising, actually, considering that, you know, Afro-Caribbean hairstyles, hairdressers weren't that, you know, were local. I had to go quite far to find. And who doesn't want to be able to just pop into a hairdresser's when they need something touched up? You don't want to be traveling all over the shop. I remember traveling across cities at one point, because when I was living in, I think it was like Northampton, there wasn't one. So So I ended up going back up to Coventry or something to get my hair done. And I was doing this trek just to, and it's just ridiculous, really. It's getting better now. I have seen more and more hairstylists now having more, you know, having other people within the store store that do specialize in it, and that's great. But I do think you're right. I think it should be across the board. It should be all hair types. Why are we just teaching one form of hair type as if there's only one form of person that matters?
Exactly.
Can we not broaden that, please?
All hair types definitely should be taught in hairstyling school. And let's remember as well that some people can be Caucasian looking, but with a very kinky hair. So
absolutely.
It's all women should be able to go to a hair salon and get.
And that is a really good point also, because I remember having a friend who had very, very, very curly hair, like it was really long. I can't imagine they would have turned her away. So what was it exactly? So yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one, because but curly hair is not just, you know, on black people. So,
When we talk about Afro hair, we have to talk about history of discrimination. And I'm hoping that in 20 years, when our daughters are our age now, they won't have to face this daily, you know, making them feel like their hair is just not the right type of hair. And I'm hoping that Afro hair will be just as normal as the lovely Disney princess hair, which I happen to like as well. My mum has that type of hair, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's definitely all types of hair that need to have their chance. So thank you so much, Rochelle. You've been a lovely guest. I think it was very personal. you described your journey. It was it was not an easy one. It's the discovery of what your hair is like, and it takes a lot of time, effort, but also work on yourself. And I'm glad you reached a stage where now you do love your hair, even though, as you said, it's a difficult hair type to manage on a daily basis.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Rochelle. Listeners enjoyed your testimony. And I'm sorry it's so rainy in London today.
I know, where's the sunshine gone?
All right, thank you so much, Rochelle.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye. So, dear listeners, this was our Sunday afternoon show on the topic of Afro hair. So I hope I gave you a desire to dive into the resources I mentioned, that now you're going to Google the natural hair movement and check the www.worldafroday.com for your assembly planning for September. And I hope I made you more aware of the issue of Afro hair and the need for promoting the beauty standards of women who have kinky, coily, nappy, frizzy hair. Thank you so much, dear listener, and I wish you a lovely Sunday evening.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio. This episode of Teachers Talk Radio has been made possible with support from Witherslack Group, the UK's leading provider of SEN education and care. They're here to support you too through an ever-growing offer of free resources, including webinars, podcasts, articles, and events aimed at supporting teaching professionals like you. Visit their website at www.witherslackgroup.co.uk to find out more.
Imagine a world where you were free to focus on sparking curiosity in your students and giving them access to the awe and wonder of learning. A world where you were supported to deliver a truly personalized education to help all your learners achieve their potential. No need to imagine it, because that's exactly what the Oxford Smart Curriculum Service delivers. Seamlessly integrating curriculum, resources, assessment, next steps, and professional development, every component of Oxford Smart is connected and working to provide you with a uniquely coherent and responsive service that empowers you and your students with transformational effect. The Oxford Smart Curriculum Service. When everything connects, anything is possible.
Introducing Bulb. With evidence-based learning at the forefront of education, let Bulb digital portfolios help reshape your educational practice. Bulb helps teachers teach and learners learn. Bulb is an easy-to-use, fully accessible digital platform that captures students' digital learning assets in one place, allowing them to evidence their learning and reflect on their growth. Our dedicated team of education specialists are on hand to ensure that Bulb fits seamlessly into all of your teaching practices. Come take a look and get a free account at bulbapp.com.
If you're listening,